Welcome to New American Radio, a series exploring new territories for the art of radio.
In its 10 years as a weekly national series from 1987 to 1998, New American Radio commissioned and distributed over 300 original works. Conceptual new drama, associational documentary, language explorations, sonic meditations, environmental compositions, musical explorations, and works that pioneer new dimensions in acoustic space. Wave Farm is thrilled to partner with New American Radio to ensure these works remain available to listeners today and into the future. New American Radio was organized by Helen Thorington, executive producer, and Regina Beyer, associate producer. A special thanks to both Helen Thorington and Joanne Green for their generous support and collaboration in this partnership. Up next is The Underseen World of Claude Jeuteau, Part 2, A Trick of Perspective, by Sleight of Mind Group. Thank you for listening.
This, of course, is utter nonsense, and is no more possible than it would be to reduce the Ten Commandments to a handy five, or the seven deadly sins to a more easy-to-swallow three. The 12 houses of the zodiac were put there for a very good reason, and it is not up to us to tinker with them.
That was a free speech message from the Association of Conservative Astrologers. This is KPHD, Channel 9, in Santa Barbara. Stay tuned for The Underseen World of Claude Jeuteau, which is made possible by a grant from the Noble Oil Corporation.
To a casual observer, the landscape that surrounds these men might appear to be the vast grasslands of the North American prairies. But this appearance is, in fact, a trick of perspective. For what we are observing is a group of scientists who are making their way towards a rendezvous with Captain Jeuteau, cameraman, and crew in the immense beige carpet on the living room floor of Jeuteau's Monaco home. This Dacron polyester shag rug has become the site of an extraordinary experiment.
For many years, we had considered the idea of shrinking tanks. If our planet was shrinking, surely it was better that we should shrink too, sustaining the eternal harmonies that nourish us. Perhaps, we thought, if we could grow to a smaller size, the world around us would appear, at least for a while, as though it were a bigger place.
Taking a clue from an earlier success, Jeuteau and his men set to work on board the Fandango to create the shrinking tank, modeled after Jeuteau's original invention of the aqualung. By breathing carefully balanced mixtures of oxygen, hydrogen, and nitrodimethylchloroline, Jeuteau has been able to repeatedly change his size and return to normal. His first attempt at shrinking produces startling results.
In our enthusiasm and excitement, we did not realize that our clothes would not shrink with us.
Oui, il faut respirer comme ça, n'est-ce pas? I will breathe like this, yes? Yeah, allez, François, oui, oui. Vas-y, donne-moi la gagne. Oui, c'est bien.
Il a disparu! C'est incroyable! Ah, qu'est-ce que nous avons fait?
Ça, c'est petit!
We were overjoyed. A new frontier had been opened unto us. Our sense of triumph was only heightened by the suggestive realization that today, at least, we would have to walk through our newly discovered world as naked as Adam in the primogenial cradle of his seminal garden.
By adjusting the mixture of gases, Jeuteau is able to predetermine and control the size of his shrink. Careful measurements of his tiny body reveal to the crew the necessary size of clothing and equipment that is to be designed for expeditions into the world of the very small. After months of intensive experimentation, Giotto puts his plan into action. The idea is startlingly simple.
One day, as we were lying in our bathtub, we noticed a slimy mold growing around its edge. Here, perhaps, was a new horizon, an undiscovered world waiting for us to explore. If we were very small, might it not be possible for us to farm and feed ourselves these strange bacterial molds that grow with such fecundity around our tub?
To create the unsanitary conditions necessary for a test of his theory, Giotto orders a halt to all cleaning in his home and moves out of the house. He takes up residence on the Fandango, moored several hundred feet below in the Grand Harbor of Monaco. It is there that he discusses the plan with his crew.
We wanted to find out how long a man could live in a shrunken state. We realized that if we could remain very small for long periods of time, then perhaps we could harvest the bounties of nature on a scale never attempted before.
Experiments conducted that winter had shown that it was safe to be reduced to a height of 1.7 centimeters and remain at that size for many hours without apparent ill effect. Giotto is now prepared to take a daring leap. Working with a team of international scientists, he cuts a clearing in the shag rug in the living room of his home and establishes there an encampment for six men. Living in miniaturized nylon tents, the six scientists will attempt to survive for 3 months deep in the heart of Giotto's shag. The team is led by British entomologist Andrew Michelson.
When Captain Giotto asked me to join the experiment, I thought that it was an extremely interesting idea. But of course, that's because it demands such an entirely new way of looking at the world.
Professor Michelson plans to harvest the colonies of dust mites that swarm through the thick pile nylon shag. Robert Glendenning hopes to track the elusive cockroach in an attempt to corral these invertebrates and graze them on the shorter pile of the hallway rug. Two other scientists will harvest the moles and spores that grow abundantly in the abandoned bathroom of the house. Professor Michelson.
Well, what we have here is a coop of mites. Now, we've captured about 5 or 6 so far. The one over there, yes, there, that's about as big as they seem to get. It's rather like an 8-legged Cornish game hen. It's really no more dangerous than chasing chickens through a field of corn.
If Professor Michelson can look upon his charges with such calm, no similar feelings can be found among his colleagues assigned to the cockroach experiment. Dr. Robert Glendenning, Professor of Animal Husbandry at Leeds University.
Yes, the cockroach is a dangerous creature, but then so was the forerunner of the cow before it was domesticated.
The common household cockroach is a creature that disgusts and revolts the average-sized human being. Reduce that human to the size of a fingernail, and the cockroach takes on the frightening proportions of a hippo-like monster. Its furtive scurry converted by a dimensional warp into the terrifying charge of a crazed rhinoceros.
We stand a howl in this conference, right? No one's ever tried something like this before, have they? We've talked to some people in Africa who handle the hippos and the rhinos that they have out there, but no one's ever tried to domesticate a hippo or a rhino, let alone a cockroach.
If Giotto and his men succeed, we face a future of abundant foods. If they fail, the Malthusian logic of overcrowding will stamp its arid footprint across the upturned faces of man's future generations.
New members joining KPHD this month will receive as a gift a beautiful set of endangered species coffee mugs. It can be your way of saying, "Wake up, America, before it's too late."
Three weeks into the experiment, the scientists have made a startling discovery. For reasons that have yet to be fully understood, the men have found that they can remain in their shrunken state for long periods of time without the use of respirators. If they sleep breathing the shrinking gases, they are free during the day to roam abroad unencumbered by their tanks. 1 month into the experiment, Jatteau leaves the Fandango and joins the scientists at their encampment in the shack.
Ah, c'est incroyable. So filthy, so quickly, eh?
Jatteau is delighted by the rapid accumulation of filth in his beautiful home.
Cobwebs on from every corner. Diaphanous testimony to the unending march of time. Great drifts of dust balls had collected like little tumbleweed in our once pristine hallways.
Earlier studies have isolated the kitchen as the favorite grazing ground of the cockroach. In an attempt to track and study these elusive creatures, Jatteau is preparing to launch a miniature hot air balloon. Floating silently on the drafts and currents that cross the kitchen floor, Jatteau and the scientists will be able to study from above the habits and migration patterns of the canny cockroach without disturbing the delicate interplay between insect and environment.
The kitchen floor stretched endlessly away from us, startling in its arctic linoleum whiteness. Far across that boreal wasteland, we could see the distant baseboards rising rampart-like. In the early morning sunlight, we wondered at the emptiness of that great expanse and reflected upon the mysteries that it held in store for us.
The hot air balloon that they will use is a masterpiece of miniaturization. Only 20 centimeters high, its tiny wicker basket can comfortably hold four scientists and their necessary gear. Its bantam burner fueled for 5 hours of propane-powered flight.
Bon voyage, Jean.
Laisse tomber les chapateurs.
Bonne chance. Hey, monsieur Guénon.
Allez, vas-y, Jean-Pierre.
Hey, est-ce que vous bien?
Attention, les corps.
Drifting across the hibernal flatlands of our kitchen floor, our rapturous silence was broken only by the reassuring surges of our Promethean burner.
From their bird-like vantage point, Jatteau and Professor Glendenning searched the white linoleum floor for signs of the cockroach.
Oh, look, there they are. Over there, yes, sir.
They have spotted a herd of peacefully grazing roaches.
I think we're in luck.
They are the smaller but more temperamental Platella germanica, one of the two species of roaches that have been found in the Jatteau kitchen.
Ah, yes. Such a rich...
In an attempt to bring the balloon close enough to film the grazing cockroaches, Jatteau and his men have failed to notice that they have drifted dangerously close to the towering oak legs of the kitchen table. Suddenly, one of his men shouts a cry of warning, but it comes too late. The balloon has collided with the leg and is now sinking dangerously towards the linoleum floor. As Jatteau struggles to gain altitude by reinflating the gas bag, the roaches are alerted to his presence by the roar of the propane burner.
In a primordial reenactment of the territorial imperative, the sentinel roaches bellow their warning to the feeding mothers and their newborn offspring. We could sense that a stampede was the most likely outcome of this unforeseen encounter.
Within moments, the enraged males charge the grounded balloon, their antennae quivering in an unmistakable display of fury. It is now clear to Jatteau that he will have to abandon the balloon and return to the kitchen door on foot.
We knew that once the roaches had vented their well-justified anger on our hot air balloon, we could perhaps escape unnoticed and unharmed.
Safely concealed by the table leg, Jatteau and his men watch in awe as a pack of enraged male roaches hurl themselves in fury at the collapsed balloon, crushing it beneath their pounding feet. In a final act of triumph, the bullroach that led the charge rears up on its hind legs and unleashes an ear-shattering cry of victory that echoes across the kitchen floorscape.
As we returned on foot to our encampment in the shag, we pondered with sadness upon our inability to establish a rapport with these magnificent creatures. A rapprochement between man and insect, for now at least, seemed impossible.
For those of you who are enjoying this program, a quick reminder, next Tuesday night at 9, a one-hour documentary called The Killer Flu. It's a fascinating look at a possible link between home furnaces and cancer. That's Tuesday night at 9. This is KPHD, Santa Barbara.
The next morning, Jatteau and his men prepare for another daring experiment. Deep inside his bathroom's cavernous toilet bowl, a temporary wooden platform has been built at the water's edge. Using miniaturized scuba gear, Jatteau plans to explore the labyrinthian maze of the Monaco sewage system in the hopes of learning more about the teeming life forms that thrive in that nutrient-rich water. Leaving Professor Michelson at the surface to examine the moles and spores that grow around the bowl, Jatteau and two divers plunge into the brackish pond.
As we enter this alien and yet somehow familiar environment, an extraordinary sight greeted our eyes. Hundreds of little creatures were swimming around us unafraid, welcoming us to their liquid world. Strange life forms, heretofore only glimpsed at through a microscope, surrounded our bodies in a rapturous dance of brotherhood.
From the beginning, it is clear to Jatteau that this dark and stagnant pool will offer an extraordinary challenge to his skills as a diver. In earlier planning, Jatteau has studied the plumbing diagrams of his house. By following his toilet's drainage, he hopes to link up with the mainstream of the municipal sewers. As an added safety precaution, he has removed the flushing mechanism of his toilet to prevent the accidental discharge of water from the holding tank.
As we plunge deeper and deeper within the pipes, our piercing lights reveal a multicolored world of teeming organisms. The spectral gastropod, blind guardian of the sepulchral world, drifts with shrimp-like majesty across our field of vision, its negrid kingdom citizened with varied life. The albid cytoplasts, pulsing with fertility, enact their reproductive ritual with tender care, the gentle water serving as their nuptial bed. We wonder at the carnelian sporosomes and transparent necropods, condemned to a lifelong revelation of their inner organs to the probing eyes of friends and foes alike.
Jatteau and his divers are now approaching the public sewer, where an increasingly dense forest of sewage weed blocks their passage. As they float above the kelp-like weed, unexpected shockwaves buffet the divers.
We realize with grave apprehension that we can proceed no further. For though we have removed our own particular flushing mechanism, it is clear that the flushing mechanisms of other households would remain in action. We must return to the surface and continue our exploration some other day.
As they emerge from their punishing dive, Jatteau is heartened to discover that Professor Michelson has made an extraordinary find.
Well, what I've got here is a sample of a somewhat yeasty water mold.
Uh-huh.
We think it is related to the lichen.
Ah, yes.
And you'll be glad to hear that it is edible.
Ah, let me taste a little bit, huh? Mmm. Ah, it's just like the mushrooms. Hmm?
It was with a sense of hopefulness that we left the toilet bowl.
Formidable.
Secure in the knowledge that here, at least, was a newfound source of food for a starving world.
Tomorrow morning at 11, join Maxwell Bellflower on Sunnyside Up. His guest will be Dr. Samuel Greenberg, who will discuss his fascinating new book, The Prodigal Jew, The Return of a Wandering Plant. That's Sunnyside Up tomorrow morning at 11.
Before leaving the encampment in the shag, Jatteau plans one final experiment. He has brought from the Fandango specially miniaturized equipment with which he hopes to record the elusive song of the Mediterranean dust mite.
For many years, we had been told of this mysterious song that so entranced domestics in the stillness of the early morn. What was the meaning of those plaintive cries that drifted, mist-like, from the tangled rugs and shags of all our homes?
An ancient folk tale passed down through generations of servants throughout the Mediterranean basin tells of a lost tribe of nomads and of the enchanted kingdom that they once inhabited. The story relates how they offended the gods that ruled over them and were condemned to roam forever in a shrunken state through the dust and filth of ancient homes.
Could it be that this enduring folk tale was no more than the personification of the mournful frenzy of the little dust mites?
Earlier surveys of the shag by Professor Michelson have revealed some disturbing information.
Well, our earlier hopes of breeding the dust mites have had to have been set aside. It's quite clear to us now that the technologies of modern house cleaning have seriously eroded the dust mite's traditional food chain, and in fact, it's pushing the little creature close to the brink of extinction.
It is said that it is only in the stillness of the dawn that the dust mite's song can be heard. In the auroral darkness, Jatto and his men string an array of sensitive microphones throughout the living room shag.
Our feelings of excitement were tempered by the foreboding sense of tragedy. Would we perhaps be both the first and only human beings to ever record the pathetic dirge of these little mites?
As the first rays of sunlight filter through the eastern windows of the room, the recording equipment is turned on. Stunned by the ineffable beauty of their song, Jatto considers the meaning of this encounter.
O little mite, fragile inhabitant of this dusty world, what soon to be forgotten secrets do you hold within your tiny body? This insect harmony of yours must surely represent the greater harmonies of life around us. Is not this song a warning of the fate that lies in store for all of us who tread so thoughtlessly upon your gentle and downtrodden world? We could not help but wonder at our newly deepened understanding of that old familiar nursery rhyme. Did you ever see a dust mite smile all these many years? Why, yes, I've seen a dust mite smile, but it was hidden by his tears. Since this program was first broadcast last year, the Blue Calm Foundation has continued the pioneering work begun by Professor Jatto in his house. If you would like to take part in this effort to save the dust mite, become a charter member by sending a tax-deductible donation of $10 or more to Mites, care of the Blue Calm Foundation, 1 Harmony Park, Silver Spring, Maryland, 20907.
The Underseen World of Claude Jatto was written and performed by Christopher Hastings and engineered by Ted Lavick and John Wilson. This broadcast was made possible by a grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting through National Public Radio's Satellite Program Development Fund. It was recorded at the Sound Space in San Francisco and was produced by John Wilson, Ted Lavick, and Christopher Hastings, who are solely responsible for its content. And now, until our next regularly scheduled program, here is Air Dancer by the Penguin Cafe Orchestra.
You just heard The Underseen World of Claude Jatto, Part 2, A Trick of Perspective, by Sleight of Mind Group, broadcast by New American Radio.